The word glory is often used to convey God's intrinsic worth or the core value of God. Glory is defined as the unspoken manifestation or the silent existence of God's presence. So in the Bible, there's a guy in a world of hurt who says, "I will glory in my weakness." In the things we can't figure out, get right, or seem to overcome, that's the word he uses, because God's core value is at its absolute highest when we are at our absolute lowest. Can you even imagine being truly grateful for the hard times? It isn't difficult when they're over, is it? But how do we find gratitude in the midst of them? Is it even possible? I was walking on a path like this a few months back, getting out of my house when I was tired of being cooped up. I was depressed, I was sad, I was alone. And on this path, I felt this thing inside me. It wasn't a still small voice telling me everything was going to be okay. It was something else, something better. I could see on down the road, a vision of the future. I could see myself beyond my present suffering. And you know what I saw? Usefulness. I saw purpose. I saw my burdens being transformed into blessings. I saw my pain being redeemed in the lives of others. My overwhelming insecurities, the lost hope, the breakdown, the bind, being used in the lives of those that God would bring my way. And in that moment, with all of the pain still inside me, I felt gratitude, grateful for my present pain. But how could this be? Because the glory, the silent existence of God's presence, the core value of God was at its absolute highest when I was at my absolute lowest. And for that, I am truly grateful. My life is not my own. My life for the glory of God.
Well, Matt Bayes offers us a very profound thought there, doesn't he? Giving thanks for the hard things, not just in the hard things. Well, we're going to come back to that thought in the message this morning, but I do think about how hard this year has been. And yet there have been many blessings. In fact, that's how I want to begin the sermon today, saying thank you on this Thanksgiving Sunday. Thank you to St. Luke's and so many of you who are part of our wider community who've helped keep ministry happening this year. You have given generously, even to the point of sacrifice. You've sacrificed your time and energy to serve other people this year, to make sure they have hot meals and that our food pantry stays stocked, even doing things like assembling Advent kits to make sure people are connected to their church and people are cared for. I've received a number of letters I'd like to share with you. I've just collected these through the year, emails, letters I've gotten through the mail. These are just a very minor few of them. One person says, "I received my stimulus check today, and since I'm blessed to still be working, I'm sending a check for $600 to the church's benevolence fund and the rest to go toward my tithe." Another here says, "This is my pledge for the rest of 2020. This was given in the first half of the year." Another says, "This gift is for a one-time gift in praise for all that St. Luke's has given me and how it continues to feed my soul." And then it goes on to name the women on our staff and how important they've been in this person's life. This note just says, "Please give to someone that needs help paying their bills. Thank you." Gosh, just awesome responses of gratitude and generosity. In fact, our pledge campaign for 2021 after just 1 week has put us at 70%. We're like at one of the highest levels we've ever been in our history in responding, allowing us to continue ministry in the year ahead. And then I've received many other emails and letters from people thanking us for the worship we've provided, for the classes, for the care, for series like our racism series, thankful for a church that stands up for a tough topic and to be a church that includes everybody, people of all races, LGBTQ people, that we continue to define openness the way we always have. Everybody is welcome in Jesus Christ at St. Luke's. And yet, folks, even in difficulty, giving thanks. This one note sums it up. With each major event, there come blessings. Ours is taking care of our 2-year-old grandson since the daycare is closed. We try and have fun every day, and it's been a delight. I'm also thankful for our church staff and all that they have done, going above and beyond to just help provide ministry. Last Sunday, we were prepared to open back our children's ministry for the first time, and we had to discontinue services here at the church. And this week, I ran into one of the children's staff, and she looked kind of down. I said, "How are you doing?" And she teared up a little bit. She said, "I was just so looking forward to seeing the children again." And that just really touched me, that our children's staff gets emotional about your children. I'm thankful for the outreach ministries that many have worked to provide, for the extra effort so many have put in to provide ministry online. For Pastor Javon and what he's done with the mobile messages. A lot of folks have said that's been like a lifeline every day. In fact, speaking of Pastor Javon, he has a chapter in a book that just came out. This is edited by Rudy Rasmus. It's entitled, "I'm Black, I'm Christian, I'm Methodist." And Pastor Javon has a chapter titled, "I'm Black, I Stutter, I Teach in a White Church." Excellent. Excellent chapter. Encourage you to get a copy of this book. You can get it through Abingdon Press. You can get it at Amazon. I'm sure it's available in many places. So unlike the Apostle Paul, who waited until the end of his letter to the Philippians to say thanks, I want to begin the message today saying thank you, St. Luke's. In this COVID year, you've done so much that to me has been like the church at its best. And I'm grateful for you. So before I start to get sloppy up here, let me say a prayer and then we're gonna jump into the message today. Let us pray. Loving God, we do thank you that in a year when so much has been taken away and we have been challenged like never before, we claim the blessings that you've provided. We turn our attention now to your word and its message for us. Help us to listen as if our lives depend on what we hear. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, the actor Michael J. Fox has had a rough time of it lately. As you probably know, he found out way back in 1999 that he had Parkinson's. He learned this at just the age of 29. Since that time, he's written 3 books in which he encourages people by looking on the bright side of calamity, sort of a make a lemonade out of lemons approach. But what he's gone through in the last 2 years is making him rethink this philosophy. Surgeons removed a tumor on his spinal cord that left him having to learn to walk all over again. And then just 4 months into that recovery, he fell in his kitchen and broke his arm so severely it had to be repaired with 19 pins and a plate. So he's written a new book. And the title of this book is No Time Like the Future, An Optimist Considers Mortality. He writes, "I had this crisis of conscience. I thought, what have I been telling people? I've been telling them it's going to be okay, when it might actually stink." Michael J. Fox doesn't use the word stink. He says, "I'm no longer in the lemonade business. I'm not talking about some glib look on the bright side of life philosophy." He's writing from a deeper place this time. He's describing a deeper understanding of Thanksgiving that doesn't mean having to ignore the bad things, but instead an idea that there's Thanksgiving that comes from the bad things. I read a New York Times review of the book the other day, and there was this line in the epilogue that just froze me. Fox writes, "With gratitude, optimism becomes sustainable." That sentence to me is like sailing over the continental shelf. I mean, you're getting into deep water right there. To look on the bright side of life without gratitude, that's going to leave you empty. But with gratitude, optimism becomes sustainable. This gets at an understanding of Thanksgiving that challenges a traditional approach. How often are we admonished to combat cynicism and pessimism and hardship by ignoring those realities and with sheer willpower, turning our attention and our thoughts to the good things that are going on, to the reasons we have to give thanks, as if Thanksgiving can't shine unless the shadows of doubt and despair are removed. But what if? What if you don't have it within you to just turn your attention away from the bad things? What if you're just not able right now to make lemonade out of lemons? What if there is actually a Thanksgiving that comes from the shadows and not just in spite of them? Now that's a powerful understanding of Thanksgiving, isn't it? So consider the last words in Luke's gospel. The last sentences, which we heard read a moment ago, go like this. "So the disciples worshiped him and then returned to Jerusalem filled with great joy, and they spent all of their time in the temple praising God." Well, now that is how you end a gospel, isn't it? Praising God. Why not? The gospel is about God coming to humanity on Christmas Day and being born, and that birth of the Son of God growing up to perform miracles and give people a renewed union with God. And even though that Son of God dies upon a cross and is buried, he rises again, and the disciples are with him when he ascends into heaven so that they can return to the temple praising God. Because that's easy praise, isn't it? Or is it? Let's think about that context for a moment. The disciples still had good reason to be afraid. The authorities were still looking for them. Their lives were still in danger. They were under threat. And not only that, they were now without Jesus. In fact, Jesus gives them the very clear understanding that when he ascends into heaven, he will never, ever again be with them in the same way. His earthly ministry has now come to an end. That's it. And yet, they're in the temple praising God. Now, we know what's going to happen to them. We know the Holy Spirit will come. They will be empowered. They will start the church. They will do things they would have never thought they would be able to do. But they don't know that at that time. All they know is Jesus has left them. They've got a reason to be afraid. And the only thing they have is a promise he left them. You know, let me ask you. When you feel like God has abandoned you in your life, is it easy to trust in the promises God has given you? If you're like me, no, it isn't. It is not easy. So just what did their praise mean? When the gospel ends and the last words say praising God, what were they praising God for? When I look over my life and I think about the hardships I've been through, and let me be clear, I've not been through hardships at all like so many of you have. When I listen to what other people go through, I feel like I've had an easy life. And yet at the same time, I've had my fair share of experiences where it feels to me like God has left me and that I'm all on my own. And here's what I've noticed. When I've gone through hard times, I've realized I can get through hard times. I can get through them, but it doesn't always mean I get better. I get through some hard times and I still hold on to anger. I hold on to bitterness. I hold on to resentment toward the people who caused my hard time or the things that caused my hard time or for God not doing something about my hard time. I don't always get better. And I also recognize something else, that many of the things that have made me better in my life have come out of hard times. It has been hard times that have improved my character, that have improved my relationships, that have improved my trust in God. And I just think about that dichotomy there. Bad things don't always make me better, but I get better from bad things. So I wonder, what would increase the percentage of bad things making me better? And so I'm back to the disciples praising God. Surely they were not praising God for the fact that they felt left by Jesus again, or for the threat that they were under. And surely they were not praising God ignoring those realities. I wonder if their praise, their gratitude, wasn't something like Michael J. Fox. That their praise was an acceptance. An acceptance that this was just part of the path that they were on. And even though it felt like God had left them, God is still at work. And that God is doing something that they will later on be able to look back on that time and say, I'm thankful for that. I know it wasn't that long ago that I told you this story, but it's such a profound story and it fits this idea so well. I want to share it again. It's about my preaching professor in seminary, the late Dr. Fred Craddock, who told about meeting a pastor one time who was born without arms or legs, just a torso. And Dr. Craddock was so impressed by his joy, his faith in God, that he couldn't help but just ask, how did he learn to take care of himself? How did he learn to do simple things like put on his clothes? The man smiled. He said, when I was little, my mother had to do everything for me. She dressed me every day. But as I got bigger, she carried me into my room one day, had the clothes laid out on the floor just like she always did, and then she set me on the floor and said, today, you're going to have to dress yourself. He said, what? I can't dress myself. You have to dress me. She said, today, you're going to have to dress yourself. And she left the room and shut the door. He said, I started crying. I started screaming and rolling on the floor. I screamed, you don't love me anymore. You don't care. He said, I did this for hours and finally I just got exhausted and realized if I'm going to get dressed, I'm going to have to figure this out. He said, it took a long time, but I managed and I got dressed. He said, it was only a long time after that I realized my mother had been in the next room the entire time, crying. Have you felt abandoned by God this year? Have you felt abandoned when you've had to receive help you've never had to receive before? Have you felt abandoned by God because you've had to take a job that is beneath your skill? Have you felt abandoned by God because you've been disrespected for nothing more than the color of your skin? Have you felt abandoned by God because you could not be with a loved one in their hour of need? What if our feeling of abandonment doesn't always mean that God has actually left us? It just means that our experience of God is changing. That the feeling of abandonment, the challenging time, the difficulty that we are in, is about getting us to another place, a good place, a better place. That's what happened with the disciples. They had been with Jesus throughout his earthly ministry, and then he was crucified. He left them, but then he came back to life and they rejoiced because they were with him again. But then came another day where it felt like he ascended into heaven and he just left them all over again. Now, not too long later, Pentecost would come, the promise would be fulfilled. They would be at a different experience of God where they needed to be, an even better experience. But in between the two, oh, tough times. It just feels like God has left me, and yet it's part of the necessary path that to get to here, you have to go through this. So what increases the percent, the chance that you might go through this time and get to a better place? Praising God. Not necessarily giving thanks for everything that happens to you, but giving thanks and accepting that what you are going through is not without God's attention. And not without God's presence, maybe not the way you want to feel it, but God is still there and God is still working. And you're trusting that one day you're going to be able to look back and say, I'm thankful for it now. I hope you have your stories of gratitude in this pandemic, things you're thankful for, even though it's been a tough year. For the Fuqua family, we've got many reasons to be thankful, but one of them is that our oldest daughter, Julie, got engaged this summer. She met a young man a little over a year ago named Christian DeLeese. And as a pastor, you know, you feel good about your daughter marrying somebody named Christian. Well, what I've come to realize is their engagement did not happen according to plan at all. Christian and Julie were planning to go with Susan and me on one of the Oberammergau trips this past year. Susan and I were going to lead two different trips from St. Luke's to see the Passion Play in Oberammergau, Germany. So they had planned to go, and not only that, Christian invited his parents, Bobby and Tina, to come with them on the trip, and that was going to be the first time Susan and I got to meet Christian's parents. I also have learned since that on that trip, Christian planned to propose to Julie. So none of that happened. Christian went to Plan B. His family vacations every summer in Vail, Colorado. And when Christian learned Susan and I were going to be in Keystone, Colorado at the same time, he set it up so he and Julie could be there and we would all get together. And that would be the first time Susan and I met Bobby and Tina. We met one day in Vail, went to this park, and that is where Christian proposed to Julie. Now, Christian's parents were in on this. Now, I promise you, I'm not just inflicting my summer vacation on you. There's a point to this. Hang with me just a moment. He proposes to Julie in the park, and then the dad planned for all of us to go to a German restaurant for dinner. So it would be kind of like the original plan still happened, just in a different location. So we go to this restaurant, and while we're sitting there eating, I was next to his dad, and Bobby leans over and he says, you know, I take at least a little bit of credit for these two meeting. And I said, well, you've got my attention. Tell me more. He said, last year, Tina and I took Christian and his sister, Jeanette, on vacation to Europe, and we were in Munich at the same time Oktoberfest was going on. We'd never been, and so we thought, let's go to Oktoberfest. He said it was the worst thing they ever did. He said it was just awful. People get drunk, it gets really rowdy, and while they were there, a brawl broke out. And he said somebody punched his daughter. He said, now, Rob, I'm a mild-mannered man, but when you see somebody hit your little girl, you jump in. And I got on this guy, and the next thing I know, I'm on the ground, and somebody's kicking me in the face, and I'm all bloody. My nose is broken, but I'm okay. I still have to go to the hospital. And he said, I realized that this happened so much there that the authorities and medical personnel, they just expect it and it's routine and nobody moves with any urgency. So because his was just a broken nose, he was on a gurney and it was going to be a long time before he got any attention. So he sent the family back to the hotel. He said, here I am lying on this gurney and you know, it's frustrating that this whole thing happened and I'm starting to get irritated by it. But then he said, you know, I decided I'm going to pray right now. I'm just going to pray on this gurney. He said, now I'm a Catholic. And so I asked Mother Mary to intercede for me. And I said, now, Mother, you were really good to our daughter, Jeanette. You helped her find somebody in her life. And by the way, she's also engaged this year. He said, but I want you to help my son, Christian. He's so lonely. And he's so ready to meet a soulmate. I just pray you'd bring somebody into his life. Well, I heard that and I kind of stopped the story and I said, well, as a pastor, I can see why you would take some credit. You're praying for your son while you're there in the hospital. Lo and behold, he meets somebody. He said, no. You don't know the full story. And then he turned to his son and said, Christian, finish the story. Christian said, well, when I got back to the hotel room that night, I was so wound up by everything, I couldn't go to sleep. And I opened up my computer and I went to this dating site that I was on and I had gotten so put out with it, I was just tired of it, I was ready to quit. So I went on to just close my account and I'm not in a great mood, open the computer, I'm ready to close the account and then I notice there's a new listing from a girl named Julie Fuquay. And so his first contact with Julie was while his dad was lying on a gurney praying. I don't know what you do with a story like that. Some people may have a problem with a story like that. They may wonder, is that how God really works? That because some people pray, God waits, and then God does something good for them? What about all the people who prayed for good things and they didn't get what they prayed for? It's valid. But I don't know that that's the point. I think the point of that story is what it did for that dad and what it does for me. To connect. Turning attention to God in a moment and in an experience when it would be easy to think about all kinds of other things and to hold on to anger and resentment. But instead, turn your thoughts to God and connect that to a blessing that happens. How easy would it be to say, oh, it's such a coincidence that Christian and Julie met, but to look at it with the eyes of faith and believe that there's a God involved and to believe that their being together is a blessing of God. Isn't that a better way to live? Isn't that a better way to go through life than just saying, oh, it's all a bunch of happenstance. Just hope you get more good ones than bad ones because that's all you got to hope for. Rubbish. It's such a better way, even in the bad stuff, to say, I believe there is a God who is at work, and I'm going to look for what God is doing because I believe that I'm going to look back and I'm going to be thankful for even that bad time. I believe things are going to happen coming out of this year that we're all going to be able to look back on 2020 and say, oh, I know there were a lot of bad things, but there were some blessings that were found that would not have come any other way. And I'm thankful. So there's not a better year for us to sing our closing hymn this morning, "Now Thank We All Our God." I say that because it was written by a Protestant pastor named Martin Rinkert in the 1600s, who was a pastor in a village in Germany in one of the worst pandemics in history. Millions of people in Germany died. In fact, all of the other pastors in this town with Martin Rinkert either died or fled. He was the only one left, the only one who stayed at one point at the worst of the deaths from the sickness, from the plague. He was burying as many as 40 to 50 people a day. One of them was his wife. Coming out of that experience, he wrote a table blessing for his children. "Now thank we all our God with heart and hands and voices." I invite you to stand up as we sing this Sunday before Thanksgiving.